Wilbur, dude. Oh. If Can't I ever had a pig, do you know what I would name it?
What?
Oink Floyd. Yeah.
That's an excellent name.
Right?
Yeah, that's a well thought out name. Oink Floyd.
And you're welcome.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
Heyo, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the fourth episode of Podcasts for Good. We're so happy that you could join us and are still listening to us or decided to listen to us for the first time. I am program manager of the Combined Fund Drive, Philip Kerrigan, and as always, my co-host,
Heather Lucas. I'm the fiscal and policy coordinator for the Combined Fund Drive.
That is correct. She is indeed. We actually are going to talk about a pretty serious subject, but one that's much more adorable than the last couple that we've gotten into. Not that there's anything not cute about civic engagement. But
Or refugees. Yeah.
Weird. But this one definitely involves cuteness and adorable things. Today we're talking about service and therapy animals.
Yeah.
And not just dogs. We're actually going to talk to a person who does, I think, even more than that.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk to two organizations today for everybody, for your listening pleasure. We're going to talk to a lady named Judith Anderson Wright. She's the president of Project Canine, that works, that provides therapy dog training and certification. And then our second organization we're going to talk to is One Heart Wild Education Sanctuary. And the founder of that, I believe, is Drea Bowen. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
That's correct.
She's the founder and board chair of that particular organization, and she's going to talk to us a little bit about what they do as well. I know people usually think of this as a very fun subject because it involves animals.
Yeah.
And according to the statistics, essentially 62% of U.S. households have some sort of pet in this country. So I think that a lot of times people think of it like it's cute because there's dogs and you know, it's so great. But
yeah,
the reality is these dogs actually make a pretty significant impact on the people that they serve.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, I want to talk a little bit first before we get into the conversations with both of these two is exactly what is a service animal, what is a therapy animal, based on what you have kind of read up on. What do you see as what a service animal is and what a therapy animal is?
Sure, yeah. The there's Washington State Law Against Discrimination and Human Rights Commission. They have defined a service animal as an animal that's trained for the purpose of assisting or accommodating a disabled person's sensory, mental, or physical disability.
Hmm.
So it's an animal that has been trained to do something for a specific person that benefits them health-wise.
Okay.
For a therapy animal or an emotional support animal, it's a companion animal that a medical professional has determined provides a benefit for an individual. And there's also another thing called an animal-assisted therapy. So that would be a therapy like what Project Canine does.
Mm-hmm.
They provide therapy animals that involve treatment at places or more comfort for people who are in hospitals or retirement homes, nursing homes, hospice, and children in school.
Okay.
Oh, and also disaster relief. So.
So,
like, if there's a hurricane or a fire or something, mm-hmm. therapy animals can come out and give comfort to people who've lost everything or lost loved ones. So.
That's good. That's good. And you oftentimes hear about, of course, veterans who have to
deal with their therapy. Yeah, because for service animals, they can help people who have certain conditions. So if someone's blind or deaf,
mm-hmm.
If someone has anxiety disorders, if they have PTSD, if they have emotional illnesses that make it hard to function in society.
Right.
And then if, like, certain service animals can be trained to, like, recognize problems with people.
Mm-hmm.
So, like,
mm-hmm.
they can sense when there's low blood sugar or if someone's going to faint. They can help people avoid triggers or they can recognize or block specific behaviors that will trigger a disorder.
Yeah. Incredible.
Yeah.
That's incredible stuff. I have to say, full disclosure.
Yeah.
I have never really considered myself an animal guy. I think the craziest pet that my family ever owned was a rabbit.
Okay.
Named Frisky.
Nice.
That seemed to live forever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, she lived for a long time.
I was hoping you'd say snake.
Oh, no. My wife and my mother were both deathly scared of snakes.
Okay.
So there's no way snakes could exist.
No pet snakes, okay.
Just a cat. But in sort of doing the research leading up to this, actually since having talked to a lot more of these organizations, you know, doing what we do.
Yeah.
I have to say that, like, it is really cool to see the value, and especially the emotional value that these animals bring to people. I don't think I ever really grasped that until I started interacting with these organizations as a part of this.
Well, yeah, I think it's easy if you have a pet, you're like, oh, this is my pet, mm-hmm. they're just part of the family, we do stuff together, I take them out, they come back in, yay. But, like, to have a dog that goes out and makes people feel better and brightens their day when they're, like, facing a terminal illness or if they're, like, if they have dementia and this is the thing that really opens them up.
Yeah.
I mean, that's cool.
That's pretty valuable.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really great. Yeah. So these organizations are, I think, really important for people and for, you know, making people feel better.
Yeah.
Can you hit us up with some stats regarding Washington residents and service animals, therapy animals, stuff like that?
You know, there's not a lot as far as numbers go. I couldn't find too much on mm-hmm. that.
Right.
So that was slightly disappointing. So mm-hmm. internet, get it together.
Yeah. Step up.
Yeah, but there are certain things, like as far as the law against discrimination goes when mm-hmm. it comes to service animals. Like, a service animal is a trained, quote-unquote, animal, mm-hmm. but training is not defined in Washington State.
Oh, okay.
So it could be up to an organization. The service animal is set apart distinctly from just being a family pet.
Okay, so it actually serves a function.
Yeah, exactly.
And not just your pet, your pet of the house.
Yeah. I know a person who has children who have diabetes. Mm-hmm. And they had this dog, just the family dog, and when it came to be where it was like, okay, we have to do something about the diabetic conditions. Like, mm-hmm. what happens if she has low blood sugar? She's just a kid. Does she understand that she's in danger?
Yeah.
Well, the dog could sense that, so they went through the whole process to get the dog trained as a service animal.
Crazy cool.
So now the dog's always with the kids and can be like, hey.
Yeah.
Little one here, she needs to take something.
Yeah, that is crazy.
So a service animal is definitely distinct and separate from an emotional support animal or a therapy dog or a comfort animal.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't take an emotional support animal, a therapy dog, or a comfort animal with you to, like, every place on the planet, whereas a service animal is something...
Can go basically anywhere.
Yeah, yeah. So if you are like, I'm hungry, I'm going to go out to eat, my service animal and I are going to this restaurant.
Right.
You can go there, and the restaurant has to serve you.
Them.
And if they have questions, they can ask you questions. Like, there's two specific ones they can ask. Like, do you have a disability?
Yes.
Yes or no question. So they can't say, what's your disability? Yeah. Tell me all about it.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how disabled are you?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
You
so,
can't do that.
Yeah. And then they can ask, you know, what kind of training does your service animal have?
Mm-hmm.
End of story. So... You can bring animals to food establishments.
Mm-hmm.
And then types of service animals admitted to food establishments, clearly, dogs.
Yes.
The other one's surprising. Guess what it is?
It can't be cats.
No.
What is it?
Miniature horses.
Wait, mini horses?
I know!
First of all...
Miniature horses.
Is there such a thing as a mini horse?
Yes. Yes, there is. It's not a donkey. It's not a pony. It's a miniature horse. So it's like...
What?
Bred... It's a certain breed of horse that is just smaller.
I know. And they're allowed in restaurants.
And they're allowed in restaurants if they're a service animal.
What?
Could you imagine? I would lose my mind if I went to go get a sandwich.
And you saw a mini horse?
I would just be like, oh my God, oh my God. I just want to touch it.
Wow.
And, you know, it's a dog or a service animal is, like, working.
I would love to hear the story of how a mini horse is included in a service animal.
Of all the animals.
Of all animals.
Yeah.
A mini horse.
Mini horse.
Some guy went into a restaurant with a mini horse.
Yeah.
And now it's...
Now it's state law. Boom.
Wow.
Miniature horses.
That is incredible.
I would lose my mind. I wouldn't be able to take it.
That's crazy. All I have are stats on the U.S. actual pet population.
Okay.
So, the average number of dogs per household of those who actually own a dog is 1.6 to 1.7. So people own more than one dog.
Okay.
What are the most popular, the top three most popular purebred AKC, that's American Kennel Club, breeds in the United States.
If I had to guess, yes. I would say there's probably a Labrador in there.
That's number one.
Golden Retriever?
That is actually number four on the list of the top three.
Okay, so then maybe, are there any Terriers?
No, top five.
What about a Bulldog?
No.
Oh.
So here are your top three.
Okay.
Your Labrador Retriever,
sure.
Which is everybody's favorite. It's the dog that shows up on nearly every poster.
That is true.
It's an adorable dog. German Shepherd Dog, number two.
Nice.
And Beagle.
Beagle.
Next, number three.
Awesome.
Yeah. So those are the top three dogs that are owned by people in the United States. And labs are always identified, as far as I can tell, as mostly the animals that can also be used as service animals. But I think, as we'll find when we interview, that was one thing we discovered as well, that when you're talking about therapy animals, therapy dogs, it's not just the cutest. There are a lot of times there's just a reason why a person finds an animal therapeutic or connects with an animal.
Yeah, so it's less based on a breed than it is about the animal itself.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, hit me with your question of the day.
All right, question of the day, Philip Kerrigan. If you were reborn as an animal,
yes.
What animal would you be?
That's funny. So when I saw this question, made me think of a story. It made me think of a story about my son.
Okay.
So my oldest son, he was just starting to really love animals. Like, he was reading all these books about animals and stuff. And his favorite animal on Earth was the orca whale.
Oh.
Right?
Surprising.
Yeah. Pretty surprising. But he wanted to know everything about orcas. He would always tell me, did you know an orca's not a whale? It's a dolphin. Blah, blah, blah. He would do all these sort of things.
Uh-huh.
So then one time he was sitting there and he was kind of like going through this book of animals. And he looks at me real pensively and he says, Daddy, what's your favorite animal? And I answered immediately, this is the animal that I would be reborn as.
Okay.
He says, Daddy, what's your favorite animal? And I said, oh, a cheetah. I would be reborn as a cheetah if I were reborn as an animal.
Okay.
Because I am not currently fast at all in any way, and I'm very jealous of cheetahs being so fast.
Really?
Yes, because I'd love to be fast, even for the short amount of time that cheetahs are allowed to be fast.
Sure.
Because they cannot be that fast for that long.
Well, I mean, what, they're 60 miles per hour or
something? I would like to run 60 miles an hour.
And what, Usain Bolt's like 25?
Yeah. I mean, I'd like to beat Usain Bolt.
Okay.
If anything.
Okay.
And if I came back as a cheetah, I'm pretty confident I could do that.
You would just, like, approach him on the street and just start running?
Yeah.
See ya!
Yeah. So this is what I tell my son. I said, well, I'd like to, you know, like, I think cheetah's my favorite. And he's like, yeah, but what's your favorite animal in the sea? And I said, oh, well, dolphins, because they're playful and fun. No, Dad. What's your favorite animal in the ocean that is black and white? And I was like, an orca, I guess? And he perked up and he goes, that's my favorite. Like, he just asked me a series of questions to get to where we had the same favorite animal.
He wanted to lead you to that answer.
Yeah, eventually he would have asked me so many caveats that it would have been like 12 questions deep. And he'd be like, hey, we got it. That's my favorite one too. So my answer for this would be, I would be reborn as a cheetah on land.
Okay.
So that I could go fast. And I'd be reborn as a dolphin in the ocean.
So you could be playful?
Yeah, because I would just like to spend my whole day playing like the dolphins do.
Okay,
and nice. They also end up showing up in like the warmest climates usually.
Yeah, so they do show up in nice places, yeah.
What about you? If you could be reborn as one animal, what would it be?
Well, I thought, you know, I can't fly, so maybe I could be something that flew. Like, I considered a butterfly because people don't really mess with butterflies. Like, they're pretty just like, oh, look, a butterfly. It's beautiful, and it's doing its thing. And I can just be like, and fly around, right?
Okay.
So I considered it.
Yes.
I think currently I'm more like a cat. Like, I'm indifferent. I'm judgmental. Leave me alone. I'm living my life.
Sure.
I just want to eat, poop, and sleep.
Sure.
I'm
sure,
cool
sure.
with that.
Sure.
But, and then I was like, okay, if there's no real, like, constraints on what kind of animal? Raptor.
A raptor. Wait a minute.
Yeah, raptor.
Wait a minute. So you found the extinction loophole in this argument.
And I did.
You decided to go with a raptor.
Yes.
Did you know that raptors are only like 3 feet tall?
That's cool. I'm tall. I could do a short thing. So like, you know, it's a different perspective on life.
Okay.
Like, but
so what happens in Jurassic Park, by the way, is total like BS. Like, there's no way a raptor could open a door.
Are you sure?
Oh, well, it's only 3 feet tall.
Well, a door handle's 3 feet tall.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Okay.
And continue. Raptors have sweet teeth, so if they couldn't use their hands because they're, you know, small,
yeah,
like T-Rexes,
yes,
then they could probably bite it and just kind of, like, wiggle it open.
Okay.
Or just, like, raptor kick through it. I'm
raptor kick.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, okay, cool.
Yeah, raptor kick, raptor screech, I dig it. Uh-huh. You know, clawing.
You
and
could do all of those things.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I do find, like, I'd probably end up being a cat or, like, a dung beetle if I was ever reincarnated.
A dung beetle?
Mm-hmm, okay. Yeah. But raptors are kind of like cats. Like, I have cats, and mm-hmm. they often look at me like they want to eat me, mm-hmm. or like they're clever and they're trying to get something out of me.
Sure, sure, sure,
like,
sure.
Like that first Jurassic Park, when the one hunter guy, mm-hmm. he's tracking the raptor, mm-hmm. but then the other raptor comes at him from the side, and he's like, oh, clever girl.
Yes, right? And then he dies.
Yes, and then he dies.
Yeah.
So I would be that raptor.
The one that attacks him from the side?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, I wouldn't be the one who's like, ha ha ha.
Plan. You're not the decoy raptor.
I'm not the decoy raptor.
You're the attacking
raptor. I'm the attacking raptor.
Got it. Yeah. Okay.
But if I had to pick an animal now, it'd probably be like an anaconda. I know!
What? We just went through all these different animals.
I know. I love animals.
Yeah. So you would be...
I would be every animal all the time.
Yeah, you'd be reincarnated as every animal in the anaconda. Including extinct animals.
Yeah.
Okay, raptors aside,
yeah,
and the other 12 animals you named as what you would come back as, which is cheating, by the way.
My anaconda don't want none.
That's right. That's right. Sir makes a lot.
You got buns, hun.
That's true.
And the buns could be bread.
Uh-huh.
I love
uh-huh.
bread.
Yeah, you named about 47 animals. Let's just face it.
I did.
Yeah,
I'd come back as them all if I was able
okay.
to.
Okay.
But could you think of how fun it would be to come back as a dog? Like, dogs are just like, hey, everything that's happening right yeah. now is the greatest thing ever.
I know.
Right?
Yeah. No, they're just so happy.
They're happy.
They're always happy.
Exactly.
And that's what's great about dogs.
I gotta say, though, one thing that I do love about Twitter
uh-huh.
is when people decide to name animals what they are, like the literal animal thing,
uh-huh.
Like trash panda.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Trash pandas are raccoons.
Uh-huh.
I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's good.
Love that.
All right. Right. So for the 7 followers we have on Twitter, if you want to hit us at @WaStateCFD with your favorite literal animal names like
yeah.
Trash panda. You can go ahead and do that with let's just call it hashtag reborn animal.
Yeah. Or what animal you'd be reborn as.
Yeah.
If
yeah.
you could be reborn as every animal, go for it.
Yeah, that's right.
There's only 140 characters.
If you wanted to cheat, like Heather just did, where she picked every animal on Earth, even some extinct ones, you could do that as well.
It'd be fun to be a raptor.
Yeah.
And they're fast as well.
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely, they are fast, you're
yeah.
right.
Yeah.
So our first guest, there's no way to segue out of that.
Nope.
Our first guest is going to be Judy Anderson Wright from the Project K9. She's going to go ahead and call in. So we'll go ahead and take you straight to those interviews. Enjoy. All right. So our first organization we're talking to today is an organization called Project K9. We're on the line with the president of the organization, Judith Anderson Wright. Judith, how are you?
Doing great, thank you.
Yeah, thanks for coming on and talking to us through the podcast.
My pleasure.
Have you ever done a podcast before?
I have.
Oh, sweet.
Done a couple.
Oh, wow.
One podcast about dog training. I'm also a certified professional dog trainer.
Oh,
and
cool.
then another one related to being a small business owner. So
oh,
it's
wow.
fun, and I love podcasts. I subscribe to quite a few.
Yes, so do I. That's basically my main profession is podcast listener, not so much podcast content person. So, Judith, why don't you talk a little bit about your organization? Maybe give us some history and kind of what your organization does for the community.
Sure. We're in our 10th year, and we are a nonprofit, and our mission is to partner with incredible, well-trained, certified dogs to provide comfort and compassion and joy to people within our community. So what we do is we train and certify therapy dogs. Mm. And therapy dogs are dogs that are the canine companions, the pets to people who saw something really special in the dogs. Usually it has to do with their ability to relate to other people. And
right.
then they go through specialized training and certification process and earn their credential and get insurance so that they can go out and do all these wonderful things. So mm-hmm. Project Canine, as I said, started 10 years ago and really was founded based on a remarkable dog that I had in my life. And he was my first therapy dog. And then we realized that there are other dogs who had that same potential. So that's a little bit about who we are, where we started. We started our first year with just 8 dogs. And now we're up to 150, 160 dogs. And that's a really nice, well-managed group of people and dogs.
Very nice.
Nice, nice. What are some of the reasons someone would want a therapy animal?
Great. So therapy animals are designed by training and temperament to actually partner with their person to go out and bring joy, comfort to other people. So when I made the choice to be involved in therapy dogs, I wanted to be able to volunteer and be with people, primarily children, who had compromised health as a result of medical conditions, mm-hmm. Cancer, birth defects, those kind of things. Right. And because I love dogs so much and I had a remarkable dog who loved people so much, I wanted to have a therapy dog so that I could bring joy and comfort to other people. So that's the work therapy dogs do. It's about service to others as opposed to a service dog who is a dog who is committed to just one individual, and that service dog is trained to provide life assistance to that one individual. So people are used to seeing dog guides, right, helping mm-hmm. people who are blind.
Right.
And there are dogs that help people in wheelchairs to either be pulled or retrieve things or open doors. There are seizure alert dogs. There's blood sugar alert dogs. And all of those service dogs are specifically trained to meet the need of one person who mm-hmm. has a specific medical need. So those individuals are people who utilize a wonderful dog who has specific training to help them live a happy and, in many cases, a safe life.
Right.
So therapy dogs go into hospitals, school programs. We have a program called Bridges to Compassion, which is a program for children. Right now we're doing a wonderful one at the Ryder Child Center, which is a program for kids who have lots of multiple special needs. And we are teaching them about kindness and caring for the community by getting to know these dogs.
Oh, that's cool.
We have lessons about how to deal with bullies, how not to be a bully. We have lessons where we talk about how important it is to care for the environment. So the dogs go, and they're the focal point of settling the kids in, and then we can teach a lesson. We have a program where we take therapy dogs to the libraries, and we have the kids read with and for and to the dogs.
Oh, that's cool.
To develop literacy and a desire to want to read when sometimes reading in front of people can be really kind of hard and intimidating and embarrassing.
So if you're reading to a dog, it's a little easier than just reading out loud in front of people.
It is, because dogs are non-judgmental. They just keep looking at you like, hey, this is fun.
Yeah.
If you mispronounce a word, the dog doesn't say, oop, that's wrong, go back.
Yeah.
Not but like the humans who are partnered with the dogs have the opportunity to say things like, oh my gosh, you know, Misty loves the story that you're reading, but I don't think she understood that last word. Mm-hmm. That word was precocious. In a way, I think you say it, is precocious.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then I'll say, Misty, is that right? And utilizing a hand signal, Misty will shake her head.
Oh.
The kid sees that as,
awesome.
Wow, this dog is helping me, and this dog didn't judge me. So it's a pretty magical thing.
That's awesome. Yeah, see, Judith, you couldn't do that with a cat. It would judge the person the whole time.
Yep.
That's right.
Cats are judgers when it comes to reading.
It is true. Cats are pretty much judgers when it comes to most
all
things.
All things, yeah, I think life.
Life in general, I think.
Well, you know, humans by nature, I think the culture in which we live particularly is very judgmental. And kids who have a hard time learning or kids who have an issue with self-esteem or fear, kids who have not been nurtured in their regular home or educational environment, love it when the dog is like, hey, I'll sit and, you know, listen to you.
Yeah.
A dog would sit and listen to read the dictionary.
Yeah.
It's just all about giving that support. We have seen kids who refuse to read, let alone read in public, in a year of being in the reading program, get back on grade level. Which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's extraordinary.
So does your organization service all of Washington or certain parts, or do
we,
you go further?
We service primarily the Puget Sound area.
Okay.
We have teams who are on in the Bremerton area. We have a team that works on the base and does violence abuse prevention program and actually goes to people who are testifying. So that's about as far as we go out onto the peninsula. We have people as far south as, well, we definitely have people in Tacoma and there. And then we have a satellite program in Oregon. So we serve part of Oregon. We've been cautious not to get too big too fast. So we are able to service parts of Washington by special request, but we keep pretty busy just in the Puget Sound area.
Very nice. So clearly there's a relationship that happens between a person and their dog as a therapy dog, but what kind of relationship do you see happen between the therapy dog and the person they're helping?
It becomes a very important and strong bond. I visit here at the Seattle Ronald McDonald House, and children will pick dogs that are really motivators and make a heart contact with them, and every dog is different and every child is different. So I've been involved with children who have actually been in the house for 3, 4, or 5 years. Some of them staying there on site for several years as they get their treatment, but then when they come back to check in, they'll stay there for a few nights, and they'll always check and see, is Misty on the schedule? When will Misty be in? So they develop this relationship and rapport with the dogs that they very much enjoy. And just like us, everybody's preference is different. So Misty is a smaller, fluffy, very princess-like Papillon. Everybody calls her Highness and a little princess, and she's really sweet and very soft, and she's that kind of dog that kids just are very much into. But then there are other dogs, like Dash. He is an incredible Australian Shepherd, and he's more energetic, and he's bigger, and he's comical, and some kids just are gaga over Dash because he is bigger and he's more active than Misty, and they love that. So it's really interesting to see how different kids or different people pick the dogs. Sometimes it's based on their breed, and other times it's just that connection.
Yeah. What made you get into this business personally, Judith?
I have had dogs my whole life. I was a little tyke, and my grandpa always had a West Highland Terrier and a Scottish Terrier. And so I fell in love from the time I was a little toddler.
Yeah.
And then I got my own dog when I was 6. When I got him, I was going through a divorce in my family, and he was the only stable, loving entity in my life. There was just too much going on in my family for anybody to really pay attention, and yet my dog, Jocko, did. And so I had this love affair with this dog who, at the time, was my therapy dog and my emotional support dog. And then as time went on, my first career, I was what's called an orientation and mobility specialist. It's a person who works with people who are blind, and I developed an affinity for the dogs that worked with a blind, and then I went on to work with dogs and people who are deafblind, and I just found the connection, that canine-human connection, to be a very important thing. And the dogs in my life really enjoyed my relationships. And then one day, I met a dog that just had this look in his eye. His name was Opie. He was a Jack Russell Terrier. I'm talking about him in past tense because he lived to be 17, did therapy dog work for all of the time he was my dog. Met him when he was 5, and he just had this incredible spirit about him. And I knew that as much as he loved me and the people in my business, that he had to give that to other people. And he and I partnered to do this, and I learned more and realized that that particular dog had the gift of healing and compassion, and it just changed my life, and he changed a lot of other people's lives. He was requested to be present at the support time of several people who passed on. That was such an honor for me, and I realized that we were giving something to those individuals and that family. Mm-hmm. So I would love to say, you guys, that I planned for it, or that it was because of my professional training, mm-hmm. but really what it was about was I was gifted with this amazing dog mm-hmm. who led me to try some new and different things. I was surrounded by people who really wanted to see things like this grow, and it continues to grow because of people like that. So that's a long answer for how did I choose to do
no,
it.
No, that's a good
it
one.
It was just meant to great. Be, and I had the professional background mm-hmm. and training to be able to do it, and a lot of people who wanted to support me in seeing this move forward. So the gift of Opie was
awesome.
Definitely part of it, and then being encouraged by people who saw the benefits.
Yeah. So final question, what do donations do for your organization? If somebody were to listen to this podcast or see you at a CFD function and decided to that they
That's
were interested
a really great question. All of the donations that come to us help us do the training of the dogs, the advocacy for learning. Right. When we go out and do programs, we need to pay our instructors that go out, because we believe that if you are in a professional organization, you should be compensated for that. It's at a very low level. If you go and you teach a one-hour lesson, you're going to be making about $25. But people are giving up their professional time away from work, so oftentimes it just helps them get to the event and mm-hmm. do their thing. It also goes to buy materials. Every place we go to do dog bite prevention, every child gets a free book. It's a lovely real-life storybook. So we buy hundreds and hundreds of those a year to give them away free. And then probably the most significant part of a donation is that we believe that if we have well-trained teams, then they should have risk and liability insurance, because they are dogs. Let me say, we have never had anyone hurt. Our dogs have impeccable temperaments and credentials, but every organization that does therapy dogs and trained service dogs has liability insurance, and our teams go out with the highest level of coverage, which is $5 million mm-hmm. a team. And so we have to pay that. Mm-hmm. We have only one paid staff member who mm-hmm. receives a minimal stipend. That's the executive director. Mm-hmm. And it's nothing like the high salary you see for places like Red Cross and things like that. So what the donations do is help us keep going out and providing the program, giving low-cost or no-cost materials to our participants, and then to have our trainers and instructors to be minimally compensated for what they teach.
Very nice.
Excellent. Great. Well, hey, thanks a lot for calling in, Judith. We really appreciate you joining the podcast, and hopefully this will get people to take a look at Project Canine.
Thank you so much for having me and letting me tell you about the most remarkable thing I've ever had the opportunity to do with my life.
Awesome. Thank you so much for sharing, Judith.
My pleasure. You guys have a great day.
Take care. So that was Judith Anderson Wright, the president of Project Canine. Before we get into the next charity, we actually have a message for our folks. If you're a donor who qualifies for retirement, we have a change in policy that may affect you. Starting on October 1st, 2017, the CFD is adopting a new policy that automatically continues any recurring payroll contributions current state employees may have into their retirement. Retiring donors will be able to cancel, add, or modify any donations before their separation date or any time during their retirement through the CFD online system, or even by contacting the state CFD office and making a request with one of our staff members. If you have any questions about this new policy, we urge you to please contact the state CFD office at 360-902-4162 or email us anytime at cfd@sos.wa.gov. Again, this change is for donors who are qualifying for retirement. We really appreciate your patience in this matter, and hopefully you'll continue giving through us. Thanks a lot. Okay, so our second guest is Drea Bowen. Is that correct, Drea?
That's right.
And you are the founder and board chair of the organization One Heart Wild Education Sanctuary. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
Awesome. So, hey, thanks for joining us on the podcast and talking therapy and service animals with us. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
So the first thing is, how about you give us a little bit of a history of your organization and what it is that you guys do for the community?
So we have been in existence as a nonprofit for 3 years. Prior to that, we were a co-op of professionals, professional board-certified coaches and mental health professionals and some community members. We came together to start the process of putting a program together to provide animal-assisted psychotherapy and animal-assisted self-development services to the community. And as a co-op, what we were finding as we were out in the community, we were constantly being asked about if we were considering becoming a nonprofit, and there was lots of support for the organization, and being a nonprofit allowed the community to be more involved with us and allows us to collaborate with other organizations and work on grants together and work on programming together and serve different areas of our community, marginalized members of our communities mainly. Mm-hmm. Partnering together to serve those people. So we started the process to become a nonprofit and have been working in this field since 2014.
Awesome. It sounds like you guys do an array of animals, right? It's not just like some organizations that use mostly dogs or things like that. You guys actually sound like you have more than a few animals.
Yes, we do. And it's interesting how that started. So my colleagues and I are, we have an additional certification, licensed and insured, to do equine assisted therapy.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And we started out doing that, and the sanctuary where we work out of also has a couple goats and some chickens, and of course the dogs and cats live there.
Yeah, right.
And we were really surprised to find that especially some of our youngsters, some of our foster clients, and just young community members were really drawn to the chickens, which was completely not expected.
Yeah.
And, of course, the dogs and cats, those are animals that so many kids really relate to and know from their own family experiences. So the horses were a big draw for mm-hmm. a lot of people, but we also found that for some of our younger clients, the horses were a big intimidating step.
Right.
And the chickens and the goats, and now we've got a couple pigs. And those have become really popular with our young people too. So We've really started to adapt more into the broader field of animal-assisted and not just equine-assisted therapy and self-development.
I love pigs.
Yeah?
They're so adorable. Yeah.
You fit on literally every animal species at this point.
Yeah, I do love all animals.
So Drea, where are you guys based out of, and what areas do you serve typically?
We are located in Silverdale, so we are on the Kitsap Peninsula. We serve the Kitsap Peninsula. We do reach into the Gig Harbor area, so some of Pierce County, Thurston County, across the Hood Canal Bridge. We also have some clients that come from that area and Bainbridge Island. So kind of because we're a specialty organization, we do have people travel quite a ways to get to us.
Right.
So what kind of challenging things are people who rely on your service, what are they experiencing that brings them to you?
Well, we're kind of like the last best hope for a lot of people who are looking for support. They try traditional therapy, talk therapy, some occupational and other types of combinations of therapies, and they're just either for one reason or another, they're just stuck. And there's just something about, and we're starting to understand it, in terms of the science, we're starting to understand what it is about being in nature and being with other social animals that opens our window to our inner world so much easier than sitting in a client to therapist office setting. So I think that it's interesting over the course of the years what we've seen. There's an epidemic, it seems like, in social anxiety and anxiety in general, some depression too in our young people. So we see a lot of kids that are impacted by that. We are a trauma-informed organization, which means that we have special training and pay very close attention to adverse childhood experiences and how that complex trauma impacts young people and adults. I mean, what happens to us as young people follows us into adulthood if we're not paying attention to what that impact is. So we see a lot of people who are just impacted by, just the human condition and the challenges that come with that.
Right.
Do you end up working with people who have issues with, medical issues like blood sugar, or if they're prone to strokes or epilepsy or anything like that?
We don't see a lot so far. So far we haven't seen a lot of clients from that category. It takes a while to get known in a community and to start to get referrals from therapists and doctors. So we're just now at that point where we're actually getting busy enough that we are in need of additional certified practitioners. And we do, part of our organization is Roots Institute, and we certify educators and therapists to do the work that we do. So we just completed our first 18-month program. It's quite a rigorous program, and have some new therapists in our community that hopefully will be joining us and providing services. So no, not so much in the medical stuff, but we do see a lot of clinical depression and more mental health challenges, or also neurodiverse challenges, people with autism. A lot of, we really started seeing more foster kids too. I mean, there's a high level of complex trauma in those kids, so it's just, there's just nothing like hanging out with a pig and forgetting your troubles for a while. And of course we have we have a way of kind of working in the things that we want to help in terms of healing, working questions and observations that are happening between a person and an animal that help them kind of put pieces together for their human-to-human life as well.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
Well, what kind of changes do you see in a person when they come to your organization and work with a therapy animal?
I think probably the things that we're most focused on are self-regulation. Just being self-aware, somatic awareness, so understanding, how our body really is full of wisdom about how we are doing in any given moment. If we're paying attention, the butterflies really mean something, and the tightness in our throats or our heart racing, tension in our body, those things really do, they are giving us information about how we are.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And if we learn to pay attention to that, and if we're not comfortable, take action for ourselves around that, you know, we can divert having, you know, going into either dissociating and checking out, not mm-hmm. not paying attention to what's going on in our life, or mm-hmm. or having anxiety attacks or raging, or, you know, either end of the scale is what we're trying to help people avoid. So self-awareness, you know, just knowing how we operate, knowing what our patterns are, knowing what stresses us, what triggers us, and then being able to develop some social, emotional life skills and tools to deal with that. And non-human animals are just phenomenal teachers around how to stay, you know, in the window of tolerance that allows them to be in balance. And it's pretty obvious when they're not, and it's interesting to see how quickly they work to get themselves back in, where humans get so conditioned to do what they do and just kind of get caught up in patterns. They're really not paying so much attention around how do I get myself back into a window of tolerance and function in a healthy, balanced way. We just keep making adjustments and live outside of that, and that's
right.
You know, where the compounded trouble starts happening.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. Really good point.
So is your setup like a ranch style or a farm style?
Yeah, we are on 10 acres, kind of 10 pretty rugged acres, you know, typical Northwest property. And we have three big pasture areas, and we don't have a big barn. We're not a big fancy location. We have two kind of separate barn areas. The horses all have run-ins with a big paddock, and then all the other species have you know, species appropriate enclosures, and we pay a lot of attention to that too. So we're really looking at what does each species need in order to you know, be well and live well and have their welfare be at the top of our priority list, as it is for our human clients.
Very nice.
Excellent. Can you talk a little bit about what donations do for your organization? So if you got a person who's interested in giving to you through their paycheck, where does that money go? What does it go to help?
Okay, so we are a largely volunteer-run organization, including the practitioners. We often work either at no fee or at a very discounted fee, and we have a scholarship fund that we use for helping people access services and removing a financial barrier. So that's a big piece of where funding goes, is to our scholarship fund. Also caring for the animals. We're different. So the concept around a sanctuary, especially in terms of how we work with sanctuaries, we are a stable social environment. So the animals that come in, we only take in animals from other nonprofits, so we're not, we don't take in animals from the public. We work with other nonprofits that have usually trauma cases, so it's not only human trauma that we're working with, but also non-human trauma. So the animals that come in stay for their lives, and they heal what needs to be healed and are in social relationship with people from the time they come in and are ready for that. And that really impacts our ability to provide the services that we provide. These animals aren't competing, they're not coming and going, their friends aren't coming and going, they're in a stable social environment that really impacts their capacity to work with our clients. So a fair amount of our funding goes to care for the animals. We have a very small admin budget. We don't need a big admin budget right now. I think as we continue to grow, that's going to change, but mainly scholarship funding and caring for the animals. And then we also are looking at, in the near future, starting a capital campaign where we would like to have a covered space for work year-round. Right now we don't have that, and we are pretty much able to work 12 months out of the year. You know, there's some days where it's just too rainy or too miserable, but
sure.
With just four legs and a roof, we would be able to work every day.
Yeah. Well, that is awesome. We really appreciate you coming and talking to us, Drea. It was really a pleasure to hear about your organization and what you guys are doing. And for Heather especially, it was a pleasure to hear about the pigs.
Pigs.
Yeah, well, come visit. Wilbur and Pumbaa would love to meet you.
Oh, Wilbur and Pumbaa.
There you go. Oh, you definitely. You got a visitor now, that's for sure.
You had that Wilbur.
Awesome. All right, guys. Thank you very much, Drea. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. Take care. So there you go, folks. Those were our two organizations that we highlighted this week. One was Project Canine, and the other one was One Heart Wild Education Sanctuary. I thought they were both extremely interesting to listen to. I thought that Judith, her actual story about why she started the organization, I thought was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
I also thought it was really interesting that Drea and One Heart Wild Education Sanctuary had multiple animals. Like, they didn't just have, you know, dogs.
Yeah, and, like, if you think about therapy animals, I mean, really, if somebody is experiencing something, I mean, it doesn't matter what it is, but if they are comforted by an animal companion, mm-hmm. like, that's beneficial.
Yeah.
So even if it's a gecko or a chihuahua or a parrot. Or an extinct raptor. You know, comfort and happiness.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would hope that raptors wouldn't be where people would go.
I don't think they're the cuddly type.
Yeah, I think they're more meat-eating.
Yes.
So you might not be so comforted
as
avoid
them.
Just
that's basically
terrified and eaten. Yeah.
Yeah, the other thing I thought was really cool about Drea and what she brought up was the actual literal therapy component to it. She talked a lot about the tangible results you see of people who go to see a therapist even, right? And they're dealing with their issues and how, you know, a therapist always talks to you about, you know, recognition of you know, sort of your issues and how to deal with anxiety.
Yeah.
It's always going to come. But they take those things that you usually do in like an office, in like a little office or a therapist's office, and they take them out to the wild where you interact with animals while you're trying to cope with those sort of things. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I would think that, like, being out, like she said, they have 10 acres.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, even just being there outside.
How relaxing would be.
Yeah, yeah. Even if it's Washington weather, if it's pouring down rain, mm-hmm. if it's windy, if it's snowing, mm-hmm. it doesn't matter.
Like, yeah.
I'm
yeah.
sure that alone, when it comes to like working through therapy issues, would be a lot more comforting and more fun than just sitting in an office with fluorescent lights.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So if you guys are interested in any one of those two organizations, what you'll be able to do is go to the Podcasts for Good webpage, and we will basically we'll put up some links and some helpful information to eat both of those organizations, and then we'll also give giving links to each one, so you can give straight from the Podcasts for Good webpage to one of these two organizations, or both, if you're so inclined to do
so.
That's something that really... that really connects with you.
Yeah.
The final thing we're going to talk about as we wrap up is we're going to talk about some of the upcoming events for the CFD. We actually just finished up the LNI Golf Tournament last Thursday, July 20th. I went to go support the Boys and Girls Club. I can tell you, based on what the volunteers said, it was one of the biggest ones they've done in a long time.
Well, they had over $4,000 come in just for people who are registering to play.
Yeah, just
to play.
Before they even started, they were ahead $4,000.
It's fantastic.
For the Boys and Girls Club. And they had some really cool auction items there on Thursday. And they had different giveaways. Overall, it was a cool affair.
Did you go?
Yeah. Went there to go check them out and met with DeFrance and his team.
Yeah.
And they were fantastic. They had these cool little trophies that were like snow globes with like a golf ball inside of them.
Did they actually have the...
Yeah. They did the whole thing. And they had the punting contests and all that sort of stuff.
I like that we both gestured snow globe.
And as if
we
anybody
didn't,
could
yeah, see. Yeah, we didn't say anything.
And for those listening, because we haven't invented our vodcast yet.
Not quite.
We were doing the shaking of the snow globe, as you would.
Snow globe shaking.
Yeah. So they had a lot of cool little stuff like that.
Nice.
And then they had a whole dinner. It was overall just a really cool little thing.
Right on.
The next event on the actual calendar is another golf tournament.
Boom.
On August 5th, the DOC takes their takes a crack at a golf tournament supporting Fair Start and the IF Project. This last year raised more than $10,000.
Yeah.
So it's a heck of a golf tournament for those of you who are interested in going to that one. On August 28th through September 1st, we are actually doing the football ticket online auction. For those of you who are interested, we've got the Seahawks tickets, the UW tickets, WSU, really any sort of football team you want to go see, except for Evergreen State College, which...
The Fighting Geoducks?
Yeah, the Fighting Geoducks. They don't have a team yet.
What?
Yeah, they haven't formed that one yet. But I did see this really cool shirt that had a football on it, and it said the Evergreen State College undefeated since 1965.
Funny.
Yeah. So,
could you imagine though, Geoducks playing football? Like, if somebody decided to set up like a whole O line and a defensive line of Geoducks?
That helmet's a disaster, by the way. Can you imagine the Evergreen State College helmet with a Geoduck on it?
Oh yeah,
that's a disaster.
Yeah.
Sorry, Evergreen listeners, we love you.
Aren't you an alumni?
I am. I'm a greener.
Yeah.
I can do this.
You can do this. Why it's okay.
Yeah. So that's happening August 28th through September 1st. Then we also have trainings that are happening throughout August in various locations. We'll start hitting the road for that. And the reason why I bring that up is because we want folks to follow us on social media, because we're going to be doing kind of something special this year where any of the locations we go, or if we're eating out at a local restaurant there, or we go to a landmark of that particular place, we're going to actually take pictures and highlight where we are across the state.
So it's going to be kind of like Flat Stanley, but CFD wise.
Yes, where is the CFD basically?
Like Carmen San Diego?
Yes, like Carmen San Diego.
Are you going to have a fedora?
I can if it makes you follow
fedora
me on Twitter.
Fedora and overcoat. Go.
Okay, I can do both of those.
I like it.
I can do both of those.
Good.
So that'll be kind of fun because we want to try and incorporate the cool thing, the things that make Washington cool. So we'll go to a lot of those different places.
Nice.
And then the Golfer Veterans Tournament, the other golf tournament, is on September 16th. So that'll be, I think, our last golf tournament of the CFD season that will welcome all folks who are interested. For that one, it goes to Homes for Our Troops. Both the DOC Golf Tournament and the Golf for Veterans Tournament are at Eagles Pride Golf Course in DuPont.
Boom.
So look out for all of those different events. We have a ton more different events. If you're interested in more events that involve CFD and our charities, go to our calendar of events that's on the website. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at WaStateCFD. We're also on Instagram and we're on Facebook. So we'll be doing a lot of different content on those, but follow us on those. And you can always ask us questions. No one's asked us questions yet. I feel like maybe the Animal Reborn thing might get us our first question.
Dude, I want to be every animal all the time.
That is a challenge thrown down.
Okay, if I came back reborn as an animal on Monday, would you accept that I could still be the fiscal and policy coordinator?
It depends. It depends what kind of animal you are.
Well, pigs are smart.
Yes.
But what if I was, like, a chameleon?
Well, no.
What?
Yeah, because they're too sneaky.
Really?
They blend into their environment too much.
I think first that of all, you're discriminating against
first
me.
First of all, let me just say this right now. Sorry to cat owners. If you come back as a cat, I don't trust you.
Well, you shouldn't trust me anyway. I mean, just flat out.
Says the fiscal and policy coordinator.
Ethically speaking.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm fine. Everything's fine.
Yeah, it's great. Fine. So so let's go ahead and end it there. I think it's a pretty good note for us to end this segment of Podcasts for Good. For those of you who are keeping score, Heather Lucas is coming back as a raptor, a pig, a chameleon, all sorts of weird things.
An anaconda.
Yeah.
Don't forget that one.
It's like ridiculous.
I'm going to eat a human. I'm so excited.
That's terrible.
I love it.
All right. Well, we'll talk to you soon, folks. See you later.
Have a good one.